fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Emily Andrew. Emily is the founder of We Are Mind Body, where Emily works as an EFT, movement and mental health practitioner who specialises in eating disorders. Emily joins us today to discuss her journey from lived to learnt experience and how she works with clients to work through eating disorders and disordered eating using EFT. Hello, Emily.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really good. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. No, it's lovely to have you. I have been coming when I can to your Tuesday tap alongs on Instagram. So I've had a little taste of what EFT is, but I'm very interested to chat to you about how it can work for eating disorders. I always like to start with kind of when people have their own personal experience to maybe explore that a little bit with you. So you've obviously gone from having lived experience to now working in the eating disorder world. So how did that sort of happen for you, and what was your experience with that?
So it was quite a long journey, I guess. I originally wanted to be an actress. That was my dream. That was everything I ever wanted. And I, you know, for various reasons, I ended up developing an eating disorder in my early teens. And it spanned quite a long time. It kind of morphed from different disorder to different disorder. And I was very functional with it for a very long time, as quite a lot of people are. I just saw it as something that wasn't really much of a problem, was just something that I did, something that I enjoyed at times. And it began to become more and more invasive in my life. I'd got to university and was doing a foundation degree in performing arts, and I collapsed. And that was the first time I think I'd really admitted that I had a problem. I went through day treatment because I was trying to get to London for that September. So it was I can recover from this really quickly. It doesn't matter how long I've had it. But actually I'd lost my nan, who was a huge, huge person in my life, and I was extremely depressed, and it just amalgamated into, you know, being able to manage the symptoms, but my body just being done. And I ended up losing my dream and me leaving London, and ended up in the Priory eventually, because, you know, it just kept going down and down and down. So I ended up going through so many losses in such a short space of time, and having to then go through eating disorder treatments, being somebody who didn't quite fit the mold of eating disorder treatments, that came with its own challenges, and I kind of muddled my way through as best I could. I had, you know, I was very lucky to have really important help, which so many people don't get. So I had huge privilege in that, but it was definitely a case of trying to fit into a mold and getting the best out of it as I could. And that got me to a place where I was able to kind of go back into the real world, if you like, and try and figure out what the hell I was going to do. And I was very, very weak by the time I'd kind of come out of my second stint of treatment after going to hospital. And I was at a gym. I looked into a room and there were loads of people lying down on the floor. And I thought, I could do that. That looks like my kind of like ability right now. And that was my introduction to Pilates. And I loved it. I loved what it could do for me. I loved the fact that I didn't have to be the strongest person in the room. It helped me to reconnect with my body, which I think actually was something that treatment never gave me the opportunity to do. So I started off in the fitness industry, but knowing that I did not want to contribute to the diet culture of fitness and all of the issues that there are around that. And I did that for a few years and I loved it. I loved working with people, but I just always knew that actually that I needed to go deeper. And I trained as an eating disorder practitioner and then EFT practitioner, and here I am. So that's kind of a really, really speedy look into it, but it's quite hard to put it into an overview.
Yeah, I always feel really bad when I ask people, because, and I always really try not to say, oh, could you give us an overview or something, like, can you give us a shortened version? Because, you know, it's your history, it's your journey, and I don't want to kind of make it out that, you know, it is something small. But equally, I always find it so funny, and I've said this so many times on the podcast, how, you know, when we talk about our journey, maybe from an eating disorder to recovery or whatever, when people say it, it sounds very linear and it sounds very kind of, you know, you've got it all worked out into how it was. And when you're actually going through it, like, I love the fact that you use the word muddled, like you muddled your way through it, because I think it is like that, isn't it? Like, when you're in it, you have no idea what you're doing, you've got no idea what's going on, it's so up and down, back and forth. But I think it's easy to listen to people when they are talking about their recovery journey and being like, oh gosh, it sounds like they had it sorted out and they got it, you know, in one fell swoop and it happened. But that's just so far from the truth.
Yeah, it is. It's so far from the truth. And I think for me, I wanted to recover perfectly, you know, like that was my thing. I was like, if I can't, like, yeah. I didn't realize that's what it was. But for me, I ended up, the thing that got me so poorly was having bulimia. And I would be so strong on, if I mess up, that's it, I've relapsed. This is, you know, and I had these really black and white traits of what recovery was and what recovery looked like. And the minute I realized that actually there isn't a perfect recovery, there really isn't a way to do it, you've got to find your own puzzle pieces, that's when things got easier. Because it was like, well, actually, you know, life in general, it's a puzzle. You've got to get pieces over time. You don't suddenly go, oh, I've completed it, you know. And I think that can sometimes happen, and that's, I guess, the problem of putting overviews together in some ways, because like you said, like, people will listen and be like, oh well, it sounds easy, but the amount of times I gave up and like didn't want to do it anymore. Moro Casino, America.
a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
I couldn't count, you know?
Yeah.
But the fact is, whether you're stepping forward, stepping backwards or sideways, it's still a step. And that's the thing. You're going to learn whatever you're going through, whether it's seen in your life as a positive or a negative, it's something that's going to contribute to the life that you're moving towards at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you brought up that idea of perfect recovery, because I think that is so unbelievably common in the fact that people aspire for that perfect recovery. I mean, what even is a perfect recovery? I think it's very sort of glamorized on social media and stuff like that, but everyone's recovery is going to look different. And, you know, what you said about maybe sometimes feeling like, you know, that all or nothing nature of, you know, I've got to step away from my behaviors completely, otherwise I've failed, where actually it's not necessarily about stepping away completely. It's about having compassion for yourself if you do engage in a behavior, and how you pick yourself up after that, and how maybe next time you manage it differently. And it's interesting that what you said about, like, you know, the fact that whether you take a step backwards or a step forwards, like, it's still a step, or sideways or whatever, because I had a therapy session today myself, and we were talking about, you know, one of my biggest concerns is that I have been in recovery before, and now I'm in a relapse, and I've still gone back to this eating disorder. Like, why have I gone back? And that's a concern for me. And the therapist said, you know, it might be that you just still had some things hanging on, and you needed to get to this point, this low again, to then be able to really think, this isn't how I want to live. You know, how you were saying, I was very functional before, and now it's got to a point where it's not really functional. I've got to do something about it. But you can live for so long with it being functional if you don't kind of completely reach that point of kind of the eating sort of not having a hold anymore.
And I think it's okay to kind of, two things can be true at the same time. You can be free from eating disorder thoughts, behaviors, and you can still be aware of certain coping mechanisms and strategies.
Sure.
And I think that's that duality of it is really important. And I think something I haven't really spoken about, actually I did at the time, but only on my Instagram stories, but when I was pregnant, I've got an 18-month-old. When I was pregnant, I got really, really bad morning sickness. And that brought up so much stuff for me that I had to, you know, it was nearly, well, it's 10 years since I was in the Priory this year. So it was, you know, nearly 10 years. And that sickness brought up so much fear for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, what if this starts something, you know? But it's about being able to step back and go, okay, right, I'm safe right now. What do I need to do? What do I need? And I think that that's the thing. Like, it's something that is always going to be a learning process. And even, you know, however many years on from not engaging in any eating disorder behaviors, you know, working in this space that I get to work in, I still had to go, I need some help. Like, I just need somebody to talk to, because I'm a bit worried about this. And that's okay.
Yeah. But that's how I see recovery, or sort of being in a place of being recovered, is, you know, acknowledging when something difficult comes up, but asking for help with it, or, you know, using a different coping mechanism or seeking support rather than, you know, just, okay, well, that's come up, that was difficult, so yeah, that behavior is probably my answer, and that's the only thing I can sort of see. I think that's where I see the line, is one is leans into the behaviors, one leans into the kind of support that you've built along the way through recovery that's much more beneficial to you long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more you lean into that alternative behavior, the easier it becomes, and eventually it does become second nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned Pilates when you were in recovery, or was that when you were sort of through recovery in a recovered position?
So I had basically come out of day treatment for the second time. So I went day treatment, hospital, day treatment. And I wouldn't really say I was in, I guess I was kind of in recovery, but I basically ticked the boxes to be allowed out, essentially. I still was definitely engaging in behaviors that weren't helpful for me. I think my relationship with alcohol became a little bit of a coping mechanism. And so I don't really know what I'd class it as. I was technically in recovery, but I was still definitely trying to figure things out. Mm-hmm. So it was in that time, really, when I began to, that was when I really started, I think that's when the work really started, because I didn't have that support. So I had to go, okay, well, what do I want my life to look like? And most of the time I had no idea. I was just like, this might be fun. But, you know, I went back to, after having to leave London, I went back to my previous performing arts course and finished my degree and worked at the gym and ended up learning how to teach Pilates. So yeah, it was in that kind of mid bit, I guess.
Yeah, I find it interesting when you said there about, like, you not sure whether you're in recovery, but you were definitely still trying to figure things out. Like, I don't know, but that to me is what recovery is. It's just a constant kind of, oh God, what the hell is going on right now? And I'm working through this. But I'm also kind of interested, if you're okay to talk about it, in what you said about alcohol being a coping mechanism. Was mm-hmm. that something, I'm interested as to what that sort of provided for you. Was that kind of as an alternative to the eating disorder, or was it kind of something as well when you were in recovery that you mm-hmm. leaned into?
So when I was, before I ended up in hospital, I was drinking a lot through my kind of behaviors. So I would drink concurrently with eating on very, very big binges. And obviously I would then end up purging. And I got to a very, very bad state, which is why I ended up in hospital, because my potassium levels were so low. And when the eating disorder behaviors kind of were, I couldn't do them anymore, the drinking would still continue. So sometimes it would just look like just not wanting to think, not wanting to feel. Mm. So I'd just drink so that I would, you know, it was the attitude towards drinking more than necessarily the amount I was drinking or when I was drinking. It was what I was looking for. And essentially I was looking for an absence of just being. I just couldn't switch off in any other way. But the issue with that would be that I would overdrink and then I would be sick because I was drunk and felt awful. So it kind of subtly fed the eating disorder for a while. And I would probably say it spanned a few years. You know,
you're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Even when I first started going into my teaching, and I thought that that was kind of normal behavior. I wasn't drinking every day. You know, it's the traditional kind of, you know, I didn't drink in the mornings, but my relationship with alcohol definitely I think I saw somebody on Instagram who talks about it a lot, and she calls it like drunkorexia, where you just like drink instead of eat, or you drink and just trying to, it's that absence, because it's a coping mechanism at the end of the day for many people. And and I think that because it was a more acceptable one, I was like, well, it doesn't really matter. But it made me miserable, and it made me anxious, and it was just, it was a really difficult way. I think it was a way really for me to maybe have like a toe in the door of that disordered eating relationship. But for many years, I convinced myself that that was okay. And, you know, and I think that it sometimes is quite common, because when you get out of really disordered, restrictive eating, you almost go, okay, well, I can go out all the time and drink with all my friends. And because my eating disorder didn't used to let me do that. And, it kind of then can sometimes turn into something a little different, which, yeah, it's an interesting one. At the end of the day, it's just another relationship that I had to then unpack. I mean, I'm 3 years and 9 months without touching a drop of alcohol. And it wasn't, I didn't quit because of those reasons, because actually it that kind of did settle down a little bit, but actually it just doesn't make me feel that great. And I wanted to see what it would be like. So yeah, learning curve, always learning, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the thing, it's continuous learning, isn't it? And I don't think that it's spoken about enough in sort of the eating sort of community about alcohol. But it's, well, it's not funny, but the only thing I remember from school being taught about mental health was drunkorexia. I don't know why that's the only thing I remember, but I always remember it in my PSHE lessons. But I think it's very interesting what you were saying, because, you know, alcohol naturally does, it kind of takes you to another world, and you do lose a bit of inhibition and maybe a little bit of the worry that, you know, that anxiety when you're drinking. But like you said, the anxiety the next day, if you're hungover and things like that, it's so much worsened. But I think what you were saying about the normalization of it is something that I have found so, I always think about it, how bizarre it is, of the sort of normalization of the quantity of drinking. Like, I think for the older generation, you know, sort of my parents' age, that it's not abnormal to have, you know, a drink every night when you get home from work and you've had a stressful day. I don't necessarily think that is so common for people my age. However, you know, every weekend going out and having several drinks with your friends is so normalized, but I don't think we really talk about why are you doing that. You know, genuinely, if it's because you want to go out and have a good time with your mates, then that's great, but can you go out and have a good time with your mates without the alcohol? And I think that's often, you know, whenever we think about any coping mechanism, what are you like when you can't have access to that? And it's definitely something that I've been noticing recently, is that the eating disorder has made me feel a bit disconnected from my friends or from my partner or whatever. And having a few drinks just loosened me up. But it also kind of feeds my appetite. So the eating disorder, it's kind of a win-win situation for Hannah because she gets to hang out with her friends, but the eating disorder is also happy. And it's very dangerous. And I'm really trying to recognize when that's coming in. Which is why I think it's so important to talk about, because it is so normalized. And also I think your eating disorder can trick you, because it can be like, oh, well, we don't normally have alcohol, so I'm letting you off. But actually it's developing another coping mechanism that's really not a good one to lean into.
And I think it's about, I think with all of it, it's just about that balance. Like I don't necessarily promote being alcohol free, because I think that you can then, you know, if you're somebody who does come up against restrictive eating, disordered eating, eating disorders, those set of rules can be like, okay, well, I'm just going to jump from one set of rules to the other. That's why quite a lot of anorexia kind of turns into orthorexia, or, you know, there's lots of safety in rules, restrictions. So I'm very careful not to go, I think that everybody should not drink. But I think, like you said, it's the relationship. Often it's not necessarily about what's out there, it's about how we take it. So, you know, if you look at diet culture, for example, I mean, it's not the greatest thing in the world. It's not my favorite thing in the world at all. But essentially, it is, you know, it's ideas, rules, it's different ways to look at something. But it's how you approach it. Same with alcohol. People will present it in certain ways, but it's the way you approach it that it matters. And it's your relationship that matters. So I always kind of say the balance is the best bit for you, for anybody. And for me, I purely don't drink just because I kind of can't be bothered. Will I ever drink again? I don't know, maybe. I'm not doing it to be sober. But generally, like genuinely, since quitting drinking for me, my life has changed for the better, and I think I'm a better person for it. And so for me, that's all I need to know if something's a good decision for me or not.
Yeah, and I think you've knocked the nail on the head there, haven't you, in terms of it's got to be what's best for you, for your individual lifestyle. And I think it's interesting what you were saying about the sort of restrictive aspect of that. And it's very much, again, the all or nothing sort of thinking. Sometimes we can go from one thing to the next. And I was actually having this conversation with my brother a few weeks back, because he's sober. And he said, actually, going from, you know, having, you know, maybe drinking a lot, to then not drinking at all is really hard. But the hardest thing is actually to have one or two and then to not have any more and just be happy with the one or two. So, but again, like you said, it's all about finding, you know, what suits you, what's right for you. And I think that's the same with everything. It's that individual kind of approach. So when it came to, I feel like a comedian, you know, when they go back to like the joke all the time, then they're like, okay, we've had that conversation, so now we'll go back. So when you were doing the Pilates, is that how you found EFT, or did that kind of come along as a completely kind of random thing that you found as you were doing your eating disorder practitioner training?
So EFT came in when I was doing my eating disorder practitioner training. They kind of spoke about it as a something that could bolster, say, for example, similar to like, you could, if you're CBT trained or EFT trained or blah, blah, blah. And I thought, that's really interesting. I don't know anything about it, but I want to learn about it. And when I first came to EFT training, I was a bit like, I don't know about this. That was honestly my initial you know, when I first started learning it, I was a bit like, I don't get it. I'm not sure. Because the teacher I had was very spiritual. And I'm somebody who I am very open and I like to explore that. But I also like to have facts and logic and reason and research. So I essentially kind of went and I did loads of research. And the more I learned about it, the more I kind of went, oh, actually, this is something that's really could be really great. And then the more I worked, you know, as I did my training, I did, we had, as part of the training, you have to do 50 hours with at least 25 different people. And I just opened it up to everybody. I just kind of said free sessions, whatever, you know, you want to work on, come and work with me, essentially. And I met, you know, I worked with so many different topics and aspects. And the more I did EFT, the more I was like, this is exactly what I was supposed to do, like exactly what I was supposed to do. And that certainty was just wonderful, because although I know that I've always wanted to work in the disordered eating space, the eating disorder space, in some way, it was always my passion, my drive. That's why I kind of went into the fitness industry at first, because I was like, well, this is how I can start to make a difference here. It wasn't really until I found EFT that I was like, oh, I get it. This is it now. This is the thing. So, yeah.
That's so good that you found your thing. I love that when people are like, yes, this clicks with me. So I guess for people listening, EFT doesn't really give much detail of what it is. So would you mind explaining what it is?
Sure. So EFT, it stands for Emotional Freedom Techniques. It has been around since the 90s. It's also known as tapping, because essentially what it does, what you do is you stimulate acupressure points on the face and the top half of the body. And it's a combination between the somatic, which is obviously the body, the tapping process, and cognitive. So it uses elements of exposure and cognitive, like rewiring, if you like. And it essentially combines the body and the mind together. So it started from something called TFT, which predates EFT, but TFT was very confusing in terms of it was certain. So say, for example, you came to me and you wanted to work on a phobia of water, there would be a certain pattern to follow, certain points to touch or hit. And it got quite confusing, and it was extremely expensive. So this engineer guy who was really interested in self-development came and he trained in TFT, and he just thought, actually, I can make this a bit simpler. And that's how EFT was born. So he wanted to make it as accessible for everybody as possible. So he kind of kept his training really low cost. It still utilized the tapping of the acupressure points, but it didn't have a specific, you know, you have to tap here if you're angry or here if you're sad. He just did them all, essentially. Do them all the time. Obviously, as time has gone on, they've done a lot more trials, because if something is going to come into the therapy space, obviously people want to know what the actual proof is that it works, because you can have it something working in front of you and anecdotal evidence, but it's not quite the same as clinical trials. So for the past 20 years, they've been doing various research clinical trials on it. And we've got to a point now where EFT has hit all the markers to be approved as evidence-based by the American Psychological Association. It is under review now at the moment. So it's hit the seven essential criteria that needs to be met in order for something to be classed as evidence-based, but it's just a case of kind of getting it actually through. So it's a really exciting time for EFT because, you know, once it's ticked off as evidence-based, it's going to become a lot more well-known. Quite a lot of people have heard of EMDR because of Prince Harry doing it.
I've had that.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So EFT and EMDR are quite similar in the way that it works. It's kind of, they're both seen as almost like the fourth wave of therapy because we're going back into body and mind, whereas CBT and kind of those and DBT and that kind of thing is all very much based in your brain and working things out and noticing patterns, changing thoughts and changing behaviors. Whereas with EFT and EMDR, it's more kind of connecting the two together. So once it's kind of approved, that will most likely mean that there'll be more funding for even more research. It's been shown as more effective in some studies than CBT. And the research of it is really, really impressive. So it's very exciting time to be an EFT practitioner or hearing about EFT.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I think I am so for getting all of the sort of therapeutic approaches we possibly can, you know, approved and readily available for people, because I know CBT has its place and it can be great for some people, but for a lot of people it doesn't work and you're kind of then left thinking, well, what's next for me? Whereas I was lucky enough to be able to go private and have EMDR, and I actually went for body dysmorphia, and it completely like transformed my kind of view of myself. It was absolutely incredible. Did Prince Harry have it because of being a soldier? Or
I think he had it. I only saw it briefly, and I can't remember where I saw it. I think it might have been on there on the Oprah thing. He was getting having EMDR done. I think it was about his mum.
Right. Yeah. So because I know that like in America, all of the soldiers, my therapist told me that when kind of they go for therapy for PTSD and stuff, they're always asking for EMDR because it's the thing that's known to work. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, in EMDR, I had it during COVID. So I started with like the visual stimulation, which I found really useful. And then I did it where you tap on your chest. So that's kind of the same thing, isn't it? With the acupuncture points and working through that. So how does it work in terms of, you know, when you're tapping? Are you saying things or are you thinking things? How does that work?
Yeah, so I guess and this will go a little bit into how it works as well. So when EFT first came along, it was all about rebalancing energy in the body. It was very much like a
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Energy thing, because it works based on from acupressure, which is obviously the meridian system. And it was seen as something that was, you know, energy psychology, and it is in some ways. However, with the research that's been done, not only have they been able to prove that there is such a system in place, it's not just energy, they've also been able to look at the effects of EFT on the brain. So it reduces cortisol and can affect six genes that are responsible for stress syndromes and symptoms.
Wow.
It can help to reduce PTSD in some cases completely. It's very quick. And essentially what the tapping process itself does is it helps to talk to the stress centers of your brain. So you've got your amygdala and your hippocampus. They're responsible to decide if something is a threat or not. And if we're feeling anxious, if we have certain triggers, then essentially the amygdala takes over and we get that stress response. But the tapping process itself helps to reduce that response. So you've got lower levels of cortisol that continue to stay low as well. So it isn't just a you do it and you feel okay for a minute. It can actually help to deregulate certain kind of triggers in the brain. So that tapping process helps to calm the brain, calm the body. It's got really amazing effects on things like gene expression as well that they've been able to show. But the actual speaking element of it helps to bring that kind of connection in. So not only are you just able to calm, you're also able to clearly kind of move through certain issues that you may be facing. And one of the best things that I think about it is that it's extremely safe. So if you're working with PTSD or certain traumas, things that are too big to talk about, you don't need to. So there are safe techniques that keep the issue that you're dealing with far away from you, or you know, you don't have to speak about it. It's very safe and it doesn't re-traumatize. So it means that you can work with really sensitive issues without a needing to let the practitioner really know what they are. You know, you can contain them. I've worked with people where I haven't known what we're working on necessarily until the end.
Wow.
And because sometimes when something really awful has happened, you cannot talk about it. It's too much.
Yeah.
It feels too much. So being able to access, you know, the thoughts, the feelings, like, you know what you're experiencing, and that's all that matters. You know, I don't need to know everything at all. It's because that may not satisfy, you know, it might satisfy a need of for information that I may have, but if that's not going to help the person that I'm working with, then that's not helping, is it? They know what they're going through, they know what they're dealing with, and that's the thing that's important. So the you can kind of use it in really safe ways, so that, you know, somebody can be working through issues and in a really effective way that is quite quick, but it's gentle as well. So what you would currently do, obviously, with the trials, we use something called clinical EFT, which is basically the standardized version of it. Doesn't mean that if you miss a point or if you don't say things that it's wrong or it's not going to work. Like, we know that it does because of, you know, all of the different kind of anecdotal evidence that there is out there. But clinical EFT would basically bring the issue that you're dealing with into focus, and then you would tap through the points using a reminder phrase. And that just helps, again, just to, it's a little bit of exposure, I guess, because if you were talking about something that, say, wasn't traumatic, then you would be talking about it using the words, noticing what's coming up in your body. And that's kind of really important, because if it can be as specific as possible, then that's ideal, essentially. So I realized I was about to go on another tangent about the research then, but I'll let you take the
go for it. No, I was only gonna ask, you know, has there been any research in eating disorders? So please, you know, tell us more about the research. It's fascinating to hear about.
So that was what I was going to go into next, because obviously this is the focus of our chat, is eating disorders. So the leading researcher for EFT has her roots in eating disorders. So she is very much eating disorder informed. She actually found out about EFT during a group session of eating disorder. You know, somebody went and was having a panic attack, and the guy she was with, who had been trying to tell her about this tapping thing that he had been doing and that it was really cool, he took her out, and she came back in. She was absolutely fine. And so much so that the researcher, her name's Peter Stapleton, she's an Australian researcher, thought that the guy had given her some kind of drug, because this woman was just calm again. And anybody who's been in eating disorder treatment, you could probably tell, you could probably remember a time where, you know, you've either gone for lunch out or snack out or something, and somebody's had a complete meltdown, and it's just been totally stressful for everybody. It was that kind of a situation. But that person came back in, joined the group again, and was very calm. So but that being said, what I also have to say is that a lot of the research that's been done into eating behaviors has been looking at obesity. So obviously that's where the money is, and a lot of the work has all gone into the food cravings research. And it's been very effective. They've been able to kind of show that with food cravings, the food cravings have kind of been reduced by 74%, which is quite a lot. Wow. The outcomes of it have been really good. But this is where I kind of take a slightly different stance, because I think that there's a lot of EFT practitioners out there who aren't eating disorder informed. So we'll use that information to then sell weight loss and, you know, that kind of thing, which we know that there can be a huge issue with. Mm-hmm. So when I first came across the cravings work in my training, I was really against it, because I just thought, this is just diet culture in disguise. I don't, you know, it's promoting weight loss because it's promoting restriction of foods, etc., etc., etc. And I was really skeptical about how it could be useful in the work that I do. With more research and doing more of the kind of the work with it, actually cravings work can be incredibly powerful for things like binge eating and bulimia. I wouldn't recommend doing cravings work if you deal with dealing with anorexia, because although it's never going to override your hunger, which obviously is good, because we need our body to, it doesn't change the way that your body works. Your body will still need food. Your body will still get hungry. You know, it doesn't change any of that. But obviously, if you start kind of, you've got an EFT person who goes up to somebody who is anorexic and goes, oh, I can reduce your cravings by 74%. And that's extremely, extremely awful.
Yeah,
as you can imagine. However, the flip side of it, and like I said, I've spent so much time looking into this, because I think that to be able to work ethically is so important. There is a purpose for it, but actually I'm more interested in how EFT can help with things like fear foods, things like, you know, we're pretty sure most people have predisposing factors to having an eating disorder. That might be personality, etc. And there's usually a precipitating event, which could be trauma, or it could be, you know, it could be something big, it could be something small. And the way that EFT can work, it can work as an in the moment thing. So if you're thinking about cravings, for example, or let's take anxiety. So if you're anxious and you're working with EFT, you can go from feeling very, very anxious to not anxious at all. Okay, so it can work in the moment, which is brilliant. But actually, what we can also do with EFT is we can go deeper. So we can look at the eating disorder, and we can understand why it's there. And if you imagine it on a table, okay, so if eating disorder is on a table, if it is an eating disorder, say, for example, binge eating, and somebody is doing lots of cravings work, just trying to figure out, I want to reduce my extreme cravings, but they're still not going and eating regularly. They're still kind of coming up at things with restriction, et cetera, et cetera. There is always going to be that element that's not going to change. However, if they're looking at the cravings and they realize what the cravings are serving, which is often, it can be a multitude of things. It could be, for example, a connection with a certain person. It could be memories. It could be, you know, we have food and our emotions are very much locked in together. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But it's when it gets a little bit distorted and it becomes overwhelming urges when it's becoming problematic for us. So that's one element of the table. That could be a table leg, is working on the cravings, but really working on them deeply. And the other elements of that eating disorder table, could be trauma. It could be certain experiences, even just memories or feelings. And if you can work on those core issues, those core beliefs that are holding that table up, and you can tap through them, you can reduce the intensity, you can help to kind of unlock that patterning, you knock the table leg out and the table falls down. Mm-hmm. So that's how EFT works with things like anxiety and stress and PTSD. You try and find the core beliefs, the core issues, and you work through them. So it's not a whole, you know, you only need to do FT. Of course, you have to still make sure that, depending on what eating disorder you're dealing with, or whether it's disordered eating or eating disorders, you know, making sure you're eating regularly, making sure that you're getting that nutritional rehab and getting those aspects, all of those different aspects in. But EFT can be an amazing tool that can help to reduce the kind of the stress of the eating disorder, but it can also work much deeper on, you know, traumas and initial kind of precipitating factors.
I think it's amazing that it's kind of such a diverse approach in terms of it being something that, you know, if you're in a panic, you can use there and then, but equally it can be something that can dig deeper to find out, you know, like you were saying, those core beliefs. And I also like the fact that you said, you know, it's not something that should be done in isolation. And I think that's the same with everything. When you're going through your recovery, we're very quick, I think, to sometimes be like, okay, well, you'll have this one form of thing that's going to help you. Whereas actually it's so important to get all those different elements, because everything covers different elements. But I think I'm just amazed actually that it can be something, because I think that's brilliant as well in terms of something that you can take away with you, you know, rather than just talking things through and working out, you know, this was the thing that affected me and that's my core belief, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, well, what do I do with that now? Whereas it's almost using the EFT to work out what your core beliefs are. And then, you know, when you've left the room and you're in a challenging situation, you can then use that skill that you've already developed within EFT to navigate that. I think that's brilliant that it's something you can take away with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why I find it such a useful thing to learn, or to be able to kind of pass on, because, you know, with my clients, we use it deep. We go deep in session. And a lot of the time, sometimes I think we feel like we have to figure it all out. We have to figure exactly why we've got an eating disorder. We have to figure out exactly why we do the things we do. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't have to know exactly. But what EFT can help to do is it can help to kind of, sometimes it doesn't matter. But if you can uncover something that maybe you hadn't thought of before, and you can tap through it, then you can reduce the intensity, you can reduce kind of how much that plays a part in your behaviors. And, you know, when I work with people in session, we would most likely dig really deep, but then they might go and use it in day-to-day life if they're feeling anxious, if they're feeling stressed, you know, fear foods, looking at things like throwing foods away. That's a huge one, because either we will just eat it instead of throwing it away, or we won't take it because we don't want to throw it away if we can't eat it. Like, that can cause a big, big issue. Emotional eating, things like body image as well. You can work with EFT with that. And it's just, it is, like you say, it's really diverse. And the that's why I'm looking forward to being able to kind of fly the flag a little bit more in terms of the eating disorder and the disordered eating space, because we know that it works for weight management. We know that it does. And actually, what I'm quite pleased about is the people that have, so Peter Stapleton, who is being, who's leading these trials, because she's eating disorder informed, there is definitely not a sense of this is the diet, you know, yeah, you have to lose weight. There is weight loss, and there's obviously intentional weight loss, which some people will be not happy with, and that's their prerogative. That's absolutely fine. But they're doing it in quite an ethical way in up in those research studies, in those trials, which is a really nice thing to see. But I am looking forward to being able to perhaps look into and kind of explore more in the eating disorder side, because I think it's something that could be amazing and for people to help them.
Yeah.
And it's just a case of, yeah, getting the word out about EFT. You know, there is no end to what you can apply it to.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And I think it's so good to hear, like you say, that the research that's being done is being done by somebody that's eating disorder informed, because often I think eating disorders can be sort of forgotten about in the mental health area. Like, are they a mental health disorder? Are they a physical disorder? Like, people outside of eating disorders don't really know where to place them. And then people with eating disorders often don't get the treatment that they need because, you know, there's just not that much research. So it's really good to hear that it is being thought about and it is going to get the right time of day. And I think, like you said, you know, the amount of different things that you can kind of put it to and use it with. And one that I liked, I think you did a tapping session on, was that feeling of fatness, and being able to work through that. And I think, you know, when those feelings come up, they're so overwhelming, but being able to have a coping mechanism that you can use to sort of calm those feelings down through recovery and beyond, I think is so important, because I think often when those feelings do get overwhelming, that's when people maybe resort to, you know, behaviors that are more negative, because of having to navigate that. So I was wondering if we might be able to do a little bit for the list. Obviously they won't be able to see you, but I thought we could maybe put this on Instagram as well, because I normally share a little snippet of the podcast anyway. So yeah, whatever, I'll let you lead the way. I'm quite excited, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure. So I guess might be good to do a general one. This one's quite good, and you can apply it if you're feeling quite anxious as well, because it's going to be about breath, okay? And it'll be about kind of coming back to ourselves a little bit, which we know can be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes, and mm-hmm. and helping just to acknowledge that. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with us just noticing our body. Okay, so I just want you to sit down, or if people are listening, maybe if you're driving, don't do this. Just listen.
Yeah, let's preface it with that.
Yeah, please don't do this if you're driving.
Or using heavy machinery.
Exactly, absolutely. What we do know, which actually we haven't said, is that even just watching tapping can affect that brain, that stress response, and reduce that strain response, because we've got mirror neurons in our brain, and they can... But yeah, it's amazing, basically.
That's
so even if you can just watch it, it can help sometimes just to get calm. But what I'd like you to do is I'd like you just to take a second and just notice your breathing. Okay, so just notice your breath. And just take a breath in, breathe out, and just notice how easy that feels. So if we rate it, 0 would be it's the deepest breath I can imagine taking. And 10 is my breath feels really tight, it feels really shallow. Just notice what number your breath feels like right now. Okay, and again, it's without judgment, it's just kind of like, okay, right, this is where my breath is. All right, and just take a note of that number. And what we're going to do is we're just going to tap on the side of our hand, so just with two or three fingers, the opposite side to where your thumb is. We're just going to start tapping here, and we're going to use a setup statement. So our setup statement basically acknowledges the issue or what we're looking at and accepts it. Okay, so you can repeat after me if you want, or you can just kind of say it in your head. And we're just going to say, even though I have this restricted breath,
I have this restricted breath.
I accept how I'm feeling.
I accept how I'm feeling.
Good. Even though. I have this restricted breath.
I have this restricted breath.
I accept how I'm feeling.
I accept how I'm feeling.
Even though. I have this restricted breath.
I have this restricted breath.
I accept how I'm feeling.
I accept how I'm feeling.
Good. Okay, so now we're going to go into our main bit. So we're going to take two fingers and we're going to tap just where our eyebrow starts. Okay, and it's not a hard tap. It's not really, really light, just something that feels good. And we're going to use a reminder phrase. So we'll just keep it simple and we'll just say, this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
We're going to come round to the side of the eye and say, this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
We're going to come underneath the eye and say, this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
Coming underneath the nose, this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
Okay, coming underneath the lip, this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
And then we're going to come underneath the collarbone, and I like to use more fingers here. So just tapping underneath the collarbone, about an inch or so down, just saying this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
We're going to come underneath the arm. So kind of on the bra line or about four fingers underneath the armpit and say this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
We're going to come to the top of the head. Again, you might want to use more fingers. This restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
Good. We take a breath in. Breathe out. And then from here, we just rate our breath again. So we've done one round and we may have noticed that our number might have gone up because we're focusing on it. It might have gone down. It might have stayed the same. And it's just noticing that. So Are you happy to share your number?
Yeah.
Yeah. So where were you at the beginning?
Six.
A six. And where are you now?
Between a two and a three.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I really struggle with a tight chest. And that was incredible. Yeah.
Amazing. Super. So
I was just gonna say, I don't think I've been breathing this deeply for months.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, I mean, that's a brilliant, brilliant number. Some people may still be quite high. So I think if we do one more round together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And what we want to do, what we try and aim for with EFT is we try and get to a zero or a one. And that is, it's just kind of take it to a zero or a one. Sometimes there might be things that block, get in the way. That's a whole nother conversation. So if you do find if you're working on an issue and you get stuck and you get blocked, then maybe either speak to a practitioner or get some advice, because it could be that there are certain things keeping your brain essentially trying to keep you safe. So it's like, no, we cannot go any lower. But let's just take our breath one more time. And we're not going to worry about the setup statement because we're already in it. So we're just going to come to the eyebrow point. Okay. And we're going to say this restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
Coming to the side of the eye. There's something blocking my breath.
There's something blocking my breath.
Good. Coming underneath the eye. This restricted breath.
This restricted breath.
Coming underneath the nose. This remaining restricted breath.
This remaining restricted breath.
Coming underneath the lip. This remaining restricted breath.
This remaining restrictive breath.
Coming underneath the collarbone. This remaining restricted breath.
This remaining restricted breath.
Coming underneath the arm. This remaining restricted breath.
This remaining restricted breath.
And to the top of the head. This remaining restricted breath.
This remaining restricted breath.
And we don't always have to because we generally just focus on it. But let's just finish off and just stay positive and just say, I can choose.
I can choose.
To breathe deeper now.
To breathe deeper now.
To relax more.
To relax more.
Because I'm safe to let this go.
Because I'm safe to let this go.
Good. Let your hand just rest. Take a breath in. And breathe out. Good. How are you feeling?
So calm. I feel like I could just go to sleep. It's so nice.
Super.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. So it's definitely something. It's a really great way of calming the body down. And, you know, I guess what's different about it is that we do focus on the issue. So we're not going, I can breathe really deeply. I can breathe. You know, we would only kind of change the wording when the person is ready to. So, you know, what tends to happen with EFT is you start to work on something and it might be, I have this issue. I can't imagine not having this issue. I don't want to not have this issue. Tapping through. And then the calmness gives you that ability to think clearly. And you might come up with different alternative ways to think about it. So we'd explore that. And then it would just slowly start to kind of relax and let go. So yeah, it's interesting how it works.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I actually can't believe how much of a difference it made. Not to say that I was skeptical, but I think when you actually do something, it really, you know, when it actually has an effect, you're like, wow, that is actually amazing. You know, I'm very much a practical person. So tell me the statistics, tell me the research and let me do it. And then, you know, I'm away. So yeah, thank you so much for going through that with us. And I'm really excited to share that with the listeners, because I think that will be, I hope people practiced along at home. And it's definitely something I'm going to be putting in my toolkit to take with me for situations. I guess just a question I have, kind of just for my own purpose, really, if I was to use that in a different scenario, you know, let's say the feeling of fullness, would I literally be like this feeling of fullness as I tap?
Yeah, you could say this feeling of fullness. Yeah. The words don't really matter as long as they feel true. So
okay,
you could just say something like, I'm feeling full. And what is really good is if you notice what's happening in your body. So you might obviously feel my stomach feels bloated, but it could also be like I'm feeling really hot, for example. And just notice, it's about noticing, being curious with, and just kind of stating what your truth is right now. So you don't have to worry about having certain words that are right. You don't have to worry. So if you wear glasses and it's annoying to get underneath the eyes, you can skip that point if that doesn't feel right. Doesn't matter which side you use. You can use both fingers if you want to. Generally, children, when you're tapping with children, you'd use both fingers and not all the points. So you can miss points out. Just making it work for you is the most important thing. There are lots of ways to tap discreetly as well. So you've got finger points where your nails touch the skin.
Yeah.
And you can squeeze those, or you can tap on those. And you can do them, obviously, in your pocket. And nobody knows if you're doing it on a Zoom call. And that's again, if you find tapping useful, that could be something that you can take into day to day. So if you find going out to the supermarket something that's very stressful, going from the food shop, you might want to just start kind of bringing that tapping into it, just to help you to calm and help you to kind of move through that situation as well.
And if you did that and then you said in your head, no, this restricted breath or whatever was going on, would that have as much of an impact as saying it out loud?
Yeah, so you don't even really need to think about, because you're in it, your body knows what's going on. So, for example, if you're having a panic attack, I wouldn't say to somebody who's having a panic attack, okay, right, just say this panic, because they're like, no. So their body is feeling it, their mind is feeling it already. So it's just a case of just doing the points and just tapping.
Got you.
And because you're in it, so you don't have to worry too much about words.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I think that is a relief, kind of, you know, if you are in a very stressful situation, I'm thinking, you can tell what I am thinking is like, oh, how can I make this perfect? So I'm really glad that you just said that, because like, I know it doesn't need to be like your body's feeling it, so it's fine. And I guess when you're in that stressful situation, you don't want to be thinking, oh, this isn't going to work because I'm using the wrong words. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. I think that's such an accessible tool that people can use. So I'm very aware of the time, and also now that I'm feeling snoozy after that, I want to go and get into bed anyway. So where can people find out more about you, Emily? Because I'm sure after listening to this, people are going to want to have a lot more information come from you.
Yeah, so I'm on all the things. So I'm on TikTok and Instagram, and I'm not really on Twitter. I'm kind of on Twitter, but not. So it's just at We Are Mind Body. My website is wearemindbody.co.uk, and I'm doing quite a lot, as you say. I'm doing some free tap alongs on Tuesdays. I've got a YouTube channel as well, which you can find through my Instagram, and that's where I've got a couple of videos. So I've got a video of that feeling fat. You know, tapping for feeling fat, so helping you to calm down in the moment. And then I'm just trying to put as much content out there to support people, just getting that kind of information out there. So find me online, and obviously if you want to work with me, send me a message, or just kind of take advantage of all the free stuff and ask questions there. I love questions. So.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Emily. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you and to do some tapping with you.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.